Transformation is inevitable, but it doesn't have to take forever. What if you could see the obstacles before they happen, sidestep the common mistakes, and drive change faster than ever? That's exactly what we're here to do. Welcome to Transformation Unfiltered, the podcast where HR professionals share their stories about how they've hit fast forward on their transformation efforts and built legacies as world-class people leaders and change makers. And now, here's the show.
Two of the things that helped fast track that for me personally, and I'm not saying everyone needs to go out and do exactly this because it's the probably more difficult path. But one is I have my 200-hour yoga certification from many years ago. I don't teach yoga. That's not what I'm meant to do in this life. But one of the things that we had to do in that program was meditate a lot. And it was a required part of the program. And that process created space for me to sit with the discomfort of silence, to sit with my own thoughts about myself and anything, and to just get comfortable with feeling not like I didn't have all of the answers. And that happened, that was early in my career. And I'm not saying everyone needs a meditation practice. I know that's incredibly different, but I would say if you can create space for yourself, even if it's 5 minutes a day, even if it's 15 minutes a week, to sit down and think about how you're moving through life and work, that is going to be, it's gonna yield a lot of return on the investment. A lot of times when I work with folks, particularly folks who are earlier in the career, it's really easy to say, I'm too busy. I don't have any time during the week. And the result is we're moving through the motions. And so I like to challenge folks to really say, what if you were to observe yourself moving through your day? What would you see? What would you notice? And what thoughts come to mind? So being able to step out of that situation and really observe yourself is helpful. The other thing is, and also I have a certification in mindfulness-based stress reduction. It was an additional practice that I felt was really enjoyable for me and something that also similarly taps into listening to yourself and trying to figure out what you're saying and what everything going on up here in your head means or could mean, or maybe the things that actually don't matter. And there are lots of different mindfulness-based stress reduction techniques that folks could look up and pull resources on and just dig into to figure out maybe there's something in there that resonates for them. Breathing techniques for me were the thing that worked, right?
Today's guest is someone who truly understands what makes organizations and the people within them thrive. I'm joined by Natalie Garamone, owner and principal consultant of 180. Natalie is a seasoned strategist, coach, and conflict resolution expert who has spent over a decade helping teams across the globe grow, innovate, and communicate more effectively. Natalie has worked with some of the world's biggest Fortune 500 companies, supporting everything from culture change to new product innovation. But what really sets her apart is her belief that real organizational change doesn't happen from the top down. It happens one person at a time. Strip away the job titles and the office walls, and what you've got are people trying to do good work. And that's where Natalie comes in. From mindfulness and meditation to leadership and communication, she helps people talk to each other and actually hear one another. Natalie, welcome to Transformation Unfiltered. We're so glad to have you. Natalie, welcome to Transformation Unfiltered. We're so glad to have you.
Hi, Craig. Great to see you.
Thanks. Let's jump right in. What's the one biggest challenge or mistake that you made or witnessed that you learned the most from on your journey as a leader and change maker?
This is a tough one for me because it's a big question and there's a much longer story around it, but I'm going to do my best to share a little bit of context. As you probably read in my bio, I was CEO before the age of 30. It was an incredible accomplishment and I had a lot of wonderful opportunities that led me to that point. And with that opportunity came a lot of pressure for me. And I think what I did with that was, I think the mistake was that I didn't do as much with it as I probably could have. And there are a lot of different reasons for that. My largest mistake was really not having confidence in my vision as a CEO. And I think that had a lot of effects on the organization and how I led and myself, but it also created a lot of opportunities for me to learn from that. And that's what's gotten me here.
That's an interesting situation. Being placed in a situation of a CEO so early in your career can certainly be challenging. What was it, do you think, that led to you not being able to articulate or have confidence in your vision in this new role?
I think that started probably in my childhood. We don't have time for all that. But I will share it, if you'll let me. I'll share a little bit about me as a human being that I think did really shape how I ended up showing up in that moment. When I was younger, I grew up with not a lot. My family didn't have a lot financially, and that my mom worked really hard to give us everything that we were able to have when we were younger. I went to private school. That was out of our means at the time. My mom worked at the bingo evenings to help cover my tuition. And so from a very young age, I always felt this kind of, I don't know, like you don't belong here, but try to fit in, right? And so I think with that attitude comes, one, an incredible ability to adapt and flex to an environment. And that served me throughout my career. When it comes to leadership, though, it gets a little bit trickier. And I think that same thing that served me for so much of my life actually ended up being a little bit of part of what contributed to my mistake, because I think that I didn't have the confidence, because I felt like, just be grateful. You have this chance. You have this title. It wasn't my company. And that's an incredible amount of pressure for a leader in any organization to have. When you talk about not just articulating a vision, but really charging forward with it, am I willing to really put everything on the line in order to not just follow this vision myself, but to rally people around it, to put someone else's money on the line to execute this vision? Those are all really big questions and things to challenge yourself with. And if you falter even a little bit, which I did, it gets really difficult. And I think that's where I found myself in this kind of self-perpetuating loop of lack of confidence. And it showed up in different ways in how I led, which felt a little bit incongruent with, I don't know, what I now know that I'm capable of doing.
How did you overcome that?
I don't know that I did. In the moment, I think there are a lot of times that I look back on and I think, gosh, I would have done that so differently. And I do it differently now. But as far as overcoming it, I know that in the moments when I felt that self-doubt creep up the most, it was really, there were a few people in my corner who I felt like I could really go to and share what I was struggling with, where that insecurity or lack of confidence was coming from. And they helped me reground in the things that deep down I knew to be true about myself, but in the moment had a hard time believing. And I think we'd probably put a name to that, which would be imposter syndrome, right? And so I think having people in my court to help reality test and reality check that imposter syndrome was really critical in those moments to help me overcome it. But I don't know that I did a great job of overcoming it in those moments. And I think that's part of what was tricky.
Just to circle back a little bit, you talked about having confidence in your vision and that feeling as if it was a bit of a vulnerability as you're in this new role. You also said you had wrestled with this for imposter syndrome and self-doubt, even as the CEO. How would you help leaders who are afraid of showing that same vulnerability? What advice would you give them today?
Yeah, I think just to set some context, look, the CEO title it's a big title and it comes with a lot of responsibility. And for me, one of the biggest hurdles to overcome mentally and emotionally was that previously it was a founder-led company. And this was a new role, a new experience, new for everybody, including myself. And I hadn't run a company before. It's not like I was a seasoned person going into this. And so part of the advice that I would give is just remember that you've not done this before. There is this, I think, really big expectation that we put on ourselves that we have to have all of the answers. And I had plenty of those moments, right? I know the answer. I'm going to dig my heels in. It's really easy to get defensive over something that even we're uncertain of a little bit. But one, I think some people would probably use the phrase like, give yourself some grace, cut yourself some slack, whatever it is. But just remember that you don't have to have all of the answers. And one of the most powerful things that I do now and that I really would encourage folks early in their career to do is admit when you don't have all of the answers or when you're feeling that insecurity and just say, I'm not feeling as steady about this decision or in myself as maybe I could or should be. And that's really part one. And part two is find those support system folks who can reality test your what might be imposter syndrome or what might be true. Yeah, you don't have the answer to this and that's okay, but maybe we'll figure it out together.
As a new CEO, did you have any networking opportunities or people to bounce things off of and get their take on the challenges that you were seeing in this new role?
One of the things that I think was wonderful about this opportunity and culturally really wonderful about the company was the belief in peer network systems and kind of peer networks groups, rather, that you could go to and hash out business issues, not necessarily with folks that are on your team, because there's such power in that objectivity and there's power and an incredible resource and wisdom in being able to talk through something with someone who is not so emotionally invested in the problem that you're solving or the issue that you're experiencing. And so, yes, I have had the great fortune of being part of during that time, and it's something that I've continued in my own with my own company, is being part of networks of folks who are maybe going through the same stuff or maybe going through different stuff that you can learn from and share with and problem solve with. An incredible resource. And it was very helpful for me at the time.
It's great to have folks that are in your corner and can support you through challenging times and be able to answer your questions and get you through some turmoil when you're feeling like you have that self-doubt and you're wondering if the things that you're doing are the right things. You made the jump from consultant to CEO. And I was wondering, as you were talking, what was one of the biggest internal shifts that you had to make, especially in a founder-led organization like that? How did you, as a new CEO, as opposed to when you were working as a consultant?
I see this with a lot of the folks that I work with now in a different capacity. What I can identify it as in myself at that point was a shift from what I'll call the tactical to strategic, right? Historically, up to that point, I had been in roles where I was responsible for executing on a vision, right? A higher level consultant or someone with decades more experience than I did said, hey, here's the strategy. Here's the direction we're going to go in. Here's what I need you to do to make that happen. Or here are the parameters or guardrails, if you will, make it happen. And so I really thrived on, and I still do thrive on, the autonomy and being allowed with a safety net to make a decision or head in a certain direction. And I appreciate those little mile markers of success. But when you're the person then responsible for setting that vision, it's a different mindset. And it really was, it was a welcome challenge for me to shift gears and to say, what is the direction that I believe is appropriate given all of the context, right? Without completely throwing away or undermining what these folks have built, which is successful. So there's a great responsibility to continue the success, but to also figure out what's the strategy and vision that I believe can take this to the next level. And that is, it requires both the ability to formulate that, but also the ability to have the competence to lead people towards that outcome. And that's a tough thing to do, but both of those are difficult individually, but doing them together and having it be a new experience it's extra difficult. It was extra difficult.
Wow. When you work with leaders now, what's one truth that you wish more executives would accept sooner in their journey?
This is going to feel a little contradictory to what I said before, because while you don't have to have all of the answers, I think you do have to believe in the answers and the knowledge that you do have. And this, when we talk about my mistake personally, this is where I tripped myself up. I did have a vision. I did have a direction, but I did not have the confidence in that to move it forward in a way that I think would have benefited everyone, including myself. And so that truth that I would encourage leaders to recognize and really hold on to earlier in their careers is, believe that the experience you do have and the answers you do have and the knowledge that you do have is enough for exactly what you need to do at that moment. And try to really operate from a place of confidence instead of a place of fear.
That's great. That's profound. That's very nice. What two lessons did you learn from this whole experience?
I think one of the biggest things that I learned and that I truly embody every single day at 180 and working for myself now is what I'm going to call kind of authenticity in communication, because communication and leadership, because I think that's where true confidence comes from. I show up and I'm myself. And I remember one time I was working with someone and she said, "Do you have any advice before I go into this workshop?" And I said, "Oh, just be yourself." And she said something which I will never forget. She said, "It's hard to be anyone else." And I said, "Gosh, it's easier said than done, because you have so many external pressures, including what people maybe perceive the type of leader that you should be." And so I think that believing in the authenticity, understanding who you are, what's important to you, your values, what you care about, how you want to communicate, really knowing and feeling what genuine, authentic confidence feels like for you, that is something that I have been able to observe in myself, tap into, and really, I'm going to use the word exude in the work that I do now. There are things that I say and things that I do that I would have never dreamed of saying 10, 12, 15 years ago in my career, but they come from a place of genuine confidence and a belief in my ability that saying a truth or telling someone something difficult that is really important for them to hear is not going to completely crumble the relationship. So I think that genuine kind of authentic communication and leadership is one big takeaway. And I think the second is really believing in the vision. If you have an idea, if you really believe that it's the right direction, how willing are you to really stand by that? And that's another place that the confidence comes from, I think, is believing in it and not just casually saying, "I think this should be it," but have the information, the data, the experiences, the anecdotes to back it up. And when that's the case, then maybe there's something to it, and really leaning into that confidence and being able to articulate it in a way that is meaningful and that people can get behind.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back to your authenticity comment about towards communications and leadership. One of the things that new managers, when I was coming up within my organization, is be yourself. You can't be a Craig Beavers or a Natalie Garone or anybody. You have to be yourself at the end of the day. You have to know what makes you tick and be true to that. You can certainly learn. There's certainly a lot of mentors that are out there, but I think you hit the nail on the head with that. You got to be yourself and believing in your vision and believing in yourself. That's tough to do. There's a lot of self-doubt that people put on themselves. I know I've experienced it too. You know, that's probably, I think, the bigger lift in this whole thing is, you know, believing in your vision and believing in yourself.
Believing in yourself is, it's taken me a long time to be honest. It's taken me a long time to get here, because early in my career, going back to the story that I shared with you about younger me, I had a mindset of just be grateful and fit in and shut up and do the work and just be glad that you're here and that you have this opportunity. And I know that's not everyone's narrative, but for me, that was the thing that made it difficult to find what being myself looked like, because I was very comfortable being the Natalie that fit into this box, or the Natalie that fit into that box, or the Natalie that fit into this box. So being able to say, hold on, what does my version of myself look like? What do I want it to look like? And really examining that and being honest with what that does look like is an incredible journey to go on. And I encourage anyone in their career to figure that out sooner rather than later, because it's going to make everything else much easier. And it's going to set you up with that inner kind of will to do the things that you and I are talking about.
Are you enjoying the conversation? There are more game-changing insights still ahead. If you're passionate about driving transformation and want to stay ahead of the curve, join our accelerated transformation community. Send us a quick message on LinkedIn or via email, and we'll send you an invite. Now, let's get back to the show.
To circle back a little bit, you talked about the authenticity and communication and leadership, as well as believing in your vision. How do you get a new manager to believe in those things, to do those things? What would be some steps or practices or principles that you would lead them towards to help them achieve that quicker?
Two of the things that helped fast track that for me personally, and I'm not saying everyone needs to go out and do exactly this because it's the probably more difficult path. But one is I have my 200-hour yoga certification from many years ago. I don't teach yoga. That's not what I'm meant to do in this life. But one of the things that we had to do in that program was meditate a lot. And it was a required part of the program. And that process created space for me to sit with the discomfort of silence, to sit with my own thoughts about myself and anything, and to just get comfortable with feeling not like I didn't have all of the answers. And that happened, that was early in my career. And I'm not saying everyone needs a meditation practice. I know that's incredibly different, but I would say if you can create space for yourself, even if it's 5 minutes a day, even if it's 15 minutes a week, to sit down and think about how you're moving through life and work, that is going to be, it's going to yield a lot of return on the investment. A lot of times when I work with folks, particularly folks who are earlier in the career, it's really easy to say, I'm too busy. I don't have any time during the week. And the result is we're moving through the motions. And so I like to challenge folks to really say, what if you were to observe yourself moving through your day? What would you see? What would you notice? And what thoughts come to mind? So being able to step out of that situation and really observe yourself is helpful. The other thing is, and also might have a certification in mindfulness-based stress reduction. It was an additional practice that I felt was really enjoyable for me, and something that also similarly taps into listening to yourself and trying to figure out what you're saying and what everything going on up here in your head means or could mean, or maybe the things that actually don't matter. And there are lots of different mindfulness-based stress reduction techniques that folks could look up and pull resources on and just dig into to figure out maybe there's something in there that resonates for them. Breathing techniques for me were the thing that worked, right? When I'm in my head and I'm feeling not confident, or I was feeling insecure, or maybe I was communicating in a way that started feeling disingenuous, being able to pause, take a few breaths, or create space for myself to reset was a really meaningful practice for me and something that I do present day. And then finally, another kind of more tactical piece, and this happened later in my career when I was transitioning from the CEO role to working for myself, I asked people, going back to what we talked about earlier, I don't have to have all the answers, even though we feel like we have to have all the answers and have it all planned out. I didn't. And I was at a really pivotal point in my career and my life where everything that I had known and everything that I had planned for was flipped upside down. And I had to take a step back and say, okay, how can I reframe this as an opportunity to do something different, to create something, to find a new path that might be aligned with what I want to do next. But in order to get there, I knew that I didn't have those answers. I honestly was at a loss. And I sat down. I had so many coffees with so many different people. And I just asked a lot of questions. And I said, what do you think I'm good at? What do you think some of my greatest strengths are? How would you describe me as a leader or as a colleague? And hearing those answers did a couple of things. One, they helped me view myself through a different lens. Again, helped me debunk some of the imposter syndrome stuff that was happening. And it was the confidence builder that I needed at that time. Because remember, I was coming off of this lack of confidence, not really having seized the opportunity that existed for me to deliver on a vision that I believed was possible. And so selfishly, it was a little bit of a confidence boosting exercise. It's not what I set out to do, but ultimately that's what it helped me do. And I think that for young folks in their career or anyone who is feeling those moments of, or maybe stuck in a moment of self-doubt, you got to get out of your own head. You just have to create that space, whether it's through a walk or three deep breaths or through a 20-minute meditation or sitting down with someone in your trusted circle to really step out of that situation. Those are the things that were invaluable to me and helped me really shift my mindset and behaviors.
That's amazing. The stuff that you're speaking about, you definitely have a good grasp on yourself, what's important and what gets you through those situations. Very introspective of you. When you have somebody that has a different personality type, that's a little bit more extroverted, a little bit more full of themselves, they're experiencing the same things with self-doubt, and maybe they compensate in a different way. Would you recommend the same things for those individuals, or what would be your thoughts on that?
I think it's one of the most fascinating aspects that I get to experience in my work in conflict management, because it's a lot of times we on teams, right? We have different ways of dealing with stressful situations or tension on our team, and they present differently, and we deal with it in different ways and show up in different ways. For someone who I think finds themselves more comfortable in the extroverted realm, right? Or maybe they are drawing energy from folks' conversations. I think that maybe lean into that type of tool, right? If you find that you're feeling self-doubt, but you need to talk it out and you need to process it, then make sure you have a good sounding board. I think the quiet time, the meditation, the breathing, that might feel difficult for someone. I don't know. It depends on the person. It depends on their familiarity with the practice. Oftentimes, I find that those are usually the folks who can benefit most from something like that. And as someone who's disc style, I'm probably more of an ambivert. And my disc style is a little, my dots closer to the center, but I am a DI style. So I can sympathize with that. I understand the desire to go into that mode. And oftentimes, what is most helpful in that mode for me is to actually hit the pause button and take a step back. So I think it depends on the person, but if the extroversion is something that they gravitate towards, I think making sure that you have the appropriate sounding boards, not just an echo chamber and not someone who's going to yes you to death, that they're actually going to challenge what you are saying or ask the good questions, ask the tough questions, that could be really helpful.
How did these lessons and the things that you've experienced early on in your career, when you started your own business, how did this help you with future initiatives and have successful outcomes?
I appreciate this question because I have a very clear answer for it. And that is the confidence that I lacked in the CEO role and the inability to really deliver on a vision that I believed I had. I knew that I had that opportunity when I decided to create 180. And what's funny is when I was, I'll call it shopping around or sharing my initial vision for 180, which is workplace conflict resolution and mediation with folks, the feedback was largely, that's too specific, that's too niche. And I got a lot of advice from folks in the consulting arena and even friends and family to go broader, be an executive coach, go into leadership development. Mm-hmm. And my instinct told me, no, I've had all these conversations with folks. They've told me what I'm good at. They've shared that I'm good in uncomfortable situations. I'm a good resource for folks. I'm good at convening people together. I'm good at helping people find a middle ground. All these things that kind of were skills that I wouldn't have necessarily articulated for myself, but other people observed in me. And that coupled with my experience and a gap that I saw in the marketplace around conflict resolution and mediation work for organizations told me, this is a vision I think could work. And I stuck with my instinct there, and I didn't. And there were so many times, Craig, when I thought, you know what, maybe they're right. Maybe I should go in that direction, and maybe I should get this certification, or maybe I should broaden it up, because it's really easy when you feel fearful or not confident in yourself or when other people are telling you otherwise to succumb to that. But this time, 8 years ago now, I said, nope, I think the niche route is where I need to go. And I stuck with it. And the rest of that is history. So that to me was really lesson and put into practice with a high degree of success. The second one, we talked about the authentic communication and just genuinely being me. That is something that I do every day. And I think it's why they like working with me. I think that it's hard to work with someone where you don't know what's real. And for me, in a lot of the work that I do, I hear from folks a lot, especially in mediation, she's like this to me in this meeting, but then when we have a one-on-one, it's a totally different person, right? And so it's very difficult to navigate that. One of the things that is so important to me and that I believe is so necessary for my role in the work that I do is I have no choice. I have to be myself, and I want to be myself, and I want that to be completely unfiltered for the folks who are relying on me to help them have those honest conversations. And so that's something that has evolved. My communication style has evolved over time to the point where I'm just more comfortable saying the thing, saying it the way I want to say it, talking the way I talk like this, talking with my hands and being open. And that's how I roll now. And that has been such a, I will use the word relief. It's a relief. And I think that it pays dividends in its own way through relationships and just how I feel about myself.
I'm curious, you had mentioned a little while ago, there was a time that you thought about expanding your services and not being as niche. How did you stay on course? What was the conversation that you had with yourself that kept you on course instead of bending to a direction that you really didn't want to take the company? How did you stay so true to yourself in that?
Yeah, I think one question that I've asked myself consistently is, does it have to be me that does this? Or if the answer is yes, then why does it have to be me? Or in me, in this case, 180, right? Oftentimes, the answer is no, it doesn't have to be. I place great value on what I call strategic partnerships, the network. I think there's so many brilliant people in this world doing such incredible work. And one of my personal and professional philosophies is we are all just people trying to do good work. And so when I think about, does it have to be 180 that does this leadership program? No, it doesn't have to be me. There are far more qualified folks in the leadership development space. And where I would rather them have me support their work is if there's a particular conflict or conflict management skill development that needs supporting as part of that larger thing. So I think to zoom out for a second and connect a couple of dots for myself, really, a lot of times when we're operating from a place of fear or insecurity, it feels like we have to do all the things to make up for it. Okay, I'm uncertain about this, so I'll double down in this, or maybe I'll overstep and go in this lane because I am uncomfortable in my own lane. Or maybe I'm out of my depth here with this skill set, and so I'll go creep back into something that feels more comfortable, but that's someone else's world now. And so I knew that was possible, right? But I also had the ability and the hindsight at the point in my career when I started 180 and several years in to say, how's that really going to serve me? Where does creeping into a different area or expanding my services really serve what I set out to do originally? And if it doesn't, then surely there's someone else who is meant to do that work and I can support in a different way. So I think really challenging yourself on one, where is that desire coming from? And two, acknowledging that it might not have to be you.
Were there any tips or techniques or anything that you learned as you're honing this process and in creating your own company, anything that helped you along the way?
Well, so many things. I think from a tactical standpoint, and I think this applies to whether someone is starting a business or running their own company or in a leadership position where you report to 7 other people or early in your career. The more hands-on stuff that I have found time and time again to be helpful for me is you don't need to give an answer in the moment, right? Even if going to that place of confidence, it's 150%, you know that you have the answer, you're set on it. Just give yourself a minute to reflect on it. Give yourself a minute to think on it and let yourself see what else might bubble up. If I hadn't been able to do that over the years, I probably would have said, okay, let's expand. Let's do this. Let's do that. And I wouldn't have stayed true to the things that have really served me and to what I've been able to build today. So giving yourself that space before responding. Again, I'll come back to having the right people in your corner and really being able to not just have them there, but speak to them with an open heart and open mind. And in line with that, this is both finding people that are capable of doing this, but also being this person for yourself, is try to not judge yourself too harshly. The judgment is a really, I think, difficult thing for so many of us. I certainly am still guilty of it. I'm not perfect. I think that we see ourselves in situations and we have such an idea and an expectation of how we are meant to be and meant to show up that it gets really easy to start getting real judgy about how we're showing up. And that judgment does not help. It just doesn't help. And so being able to remove some judgment from how you're viewing yourselves in those moments, but also have those people in your corner who are not going to judge you for showing up as your most insecure, least confident, most questioning self, and just let you talk it out.
So Natalie, what advice would you give a person who's just starting out on their first big role, the project, the transformation effort?
Oh, yes. One, you got this. You got it. You will figure it out. That is the absolute biggest thing I can say and something that I have lived and believed. You're going to figure it out. You're going to need to be really thoughtful and intentional about how you figure it out. It's not just going to come. It's not going to be like just a light bulb lightning moment in the middle of a meeting. It is going to require effort. It's going to require, I like your word earlier, Craig, introspection. And it's going to require intentionality on figuring out where you need to ask questions, where you need to lean into the knowledge and experience and vision that you do have. And it's going to require you to really learn about yourself and understand what motivates you and what is going to help you feel confident in leading that transformation. A very tactical tip, trick, tool, whatever you want to call it, that oftentimes I encourage people in coaching sessions to do is whenever you feel like you are going to respond in the moment with a statement, or even maybe you put in a lot of effort around this transformation effort and you do have the answers and someone's questioning it or challenging it, and your initial reaction is to get a little defensive or defend your point of view, write down a question instead. Figure out what you might ask and try to shift your mindset to being a little bit more curious. Transformation efforts and change efforts they don't happen overnight. And so being able to build that muscle of curiosity, willingness to listen, willingness to adapt is going to be really helpful.
Natalie, this has been a fantastic conversation with you today. I really appreciate your time and effort and all the great information that you brought forward with this. Where can people find you?
Thank you so much, Craig. This has been wonderful. I'm so grateful to be here. If anyone is interested in learning more or interested in continuing the conversation, I invite them to check out my website, 180, O-N-E-E-I-G-H-T-Y. It's 180, all spelled out, .io. Free resources, videos, podcasts, a lot around tools to help manage conflict more constructively. You can find me on LinkedIn, both 180 and Natalie Garamone on LinkedIn as well. And I would welcome anyone reaching out. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Natalie. I really appreciate it. Natalie, what you've shared today was such a powerful reminder that leadership isn't about having all the answers. It's about having the courage to be real, even when it feels vulnerable. You walked us through what it's like stepping into the role of CEO, carrying the weight of expectations while silently wrestling with imposter syndrome. You were honest about the pressure to perform and how in those early moments you didn't feel confident in your own vision. That kind of transparency is rare and incredibly resonant. What stood out most was how you found your way forward by not pushing harder, but by pausing. You began leading with authenticity, letting go of the need to appear perfect and instead showing up with honesty and clarity. You show how peer support, mindfulness, and even sometimes as simple as intentional breathing help ground you when the self-doubt crept in. And over time, you rebuilt your confidence, not by becoming someone else, but by remembering who you are. You leaned in your experiences, trusted your knowledge, and started owning your vision as valid and valuable. Your story is a testament to what happens when a leader stops performing and starts leading with purpose. Thank you for bringing the unfiltered truth behind transformation. This conversation will stick with a lot of people for a long time.
Thank you for hanging out with us and listening to Transformation Unfiltered. If you found today's conversation valuable, leave us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast player. It helps us reach more changemakers just like you. Do you know someone who would be great as a guest on our show? Send us a message on LinkedIn or drop us an email. We'd love to hear your recommendation and appreciate the connection. See you next week for another episode featuring an HR leader just like you who's hitting fast forward on change, impact, and transformation.